and Answers begins right now.
When your child or teen asks, "How do I know Christianity is true?" how would you answer their question? Are you prepared with good answers? As our children grow older, it is not enough to just say, "Just have faith." We must provide solid evidence and answers to their questions. At the 2024 Evidence and Answers Conference, Pat provided some easy-to-remember evidences that you can share when your student asks, "How do I know Christianity is true?" You're tuned to Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. During our time together today, we will begin part one of message six, taken from our 2024 Evidence and Answers Apologetics Conference series, entitled "How I Know Christianity is True."
All right. Well, we're coming near the end here, and I wanted to share with you just some basic evidences of how we know Christianity is true. When your children or student comes and says, "Mom, Dad, Grandma, Grandpa, Sunday school teacher, how do I know what I believe is true?" I want to give you just basic evidences, okay? Now, I did not grow up Christian. I grew up in a Japanese Buddhist home. And in my high school years, I began asking the questions of life. Why am I here? What's the purpose of my life? Why do I want to study and make money and suffer? Why not just play golf and have fun the rest of my life? Why am I here? What am I supposed to do? How do I live? How do I know right from wrong? Everyone's saying this is right. This lifestyle is wrong. And I began asking those questions, and I investigated Buddhism because that was my heritage. And I saw that, remember one of the worldview tests? It was an unlivable system. That's why you have over 1,000 different forms of Buddhism. It's been modified so much. And then I went to a Christian private school, quote, Christian. But they told us the Bible was just a bunch of fairy tales and fables, kind of like the Hawaiian religions, just kind of religious stories that teach a lesson, but not really true. And so I eventually became an atheist as I got into the sciences and history and all that. I became an atheist. But then it led to that horrible conclusion that all atheists, comes to eventually, that there's no intended purpose or reason for the universe's existence. There's no purpose then for all, we're just really a cosmic anomaly. And in the end, everything ends in death and annihilation. So ultimately, you come to the conclusion that our existence is meaningless. I mean, what difference does it make? And it all ends in death and annihilation. Or the doctor that goes to save lives, everything ends in death and annihilation. And we come to the ultimate conclusion, life is ultimately meaningless. So it was a dark time in my young adult years. But one day, my best buddy on the baseball team came to faith in Christ, kidnapped us. We thought we were going to practice baseball on Sunday morning, but then brought us to church. And I heard the message of the gospel for the first time in my life. And I thought it was the most powerful, most compelling message that I had ever heard. And I prayed in the pew. I said, "God of the Bible, if you're for real, if this is all for real, I'd like to get to know you." And the next day, I went to my school priest, and I said, "Hey, I went to this Baptist church. I heard the gospel. God of the universe loves us, has a plan for us. His son came, died for us, rose from the dead." And he smiled, and he said, "Well, any religion is good. Doesn't matter what you believe. They're all based on a lot of legends and mythology anyway. But if that makes you happy, good for you." And I was just stunned. I thought, whoa, here's a priest who has studied this all his life, and he doesn't seem to believe the message. You know, and I took Bible class from him just so I could learn the Bible. And I learned all the historical errors in the Bible. There's no evidence for the Exodus or the creation account. There's nothing historical in the Old Testament until we come to King Ahab. And stories of Jesus, there's so many parallels with Greek mythology and the Greek in the book of Daniel. If Daniel's written in the time of the Babylonians, why do you have Greek in there and Greek culture being introduced in there? The Greek culture comes centuries later. And I just thought the case against Christianity was overwhelming. And I would go to church and I'd say, "Hey, look what I found. Look what they're teaching me in my Bible class. Look at this. And no one had any answers for me. I was about ready to walk away from the faith when someone gave me a book on apologetics and introduced me to this wonderful world of apologetics. And there for the first time, I saw there is compelling reasons and evidence that God exists, Jesus lived a miraculous life, died, and rose again. So I want to give you some basic evidences of how we know Christianity is true. And it's in this brief time we have together, I can't give you an extensive apologetics and all the evidences that are out there. You'll have to listen to our radio show or take some classes at Pac Rim University, where we got some of our students there. So I'm just going to give you just four basic reasons. It's basically this: God exists and Jesus rose from the dead. If you can prove those two premises, then Christianity is true. A personal God exists and Jesus rose from the dead. All right. I don't expect you to get this all, but remember, you can go to our website at evidenceandanswers.org and you can hear all of this information and a whole lot more from myself, but also from some of the top scholars from around the world. Now, first of all, how do we know God exists? I remember we were in a tennis match in our tennis league and 15 minutes before we're going to start. And the captain was talking. He says, "Folks, I hope you guys met Pat. Pat is a priest, you know?" And I said, "Oh, no, I'm not a priest." I said, "A lot of people think I am because I look so holy, you know?" And the whole team went, "Ah, not you, him. No, no." And they said, "Well, what are you then?" And I said, "Well," so I was trying to figure out what's that. I said, "I'm an archaeologist. My degree's in that." And they said, "Why would a guy from Hawaii be interested in archaeology?" And I said, "Well, because I wanted to know if the Bible is true or false. If it's true, it's the greatest book ever written. If it's false, it's the biggest hoax ever given to mankind." And there was a pause there. And then finally someone said, "Well, how do you know God exists?" I had 10 minutes to prove the existence of God. All right, so here's some basic evidences that you can present real quickly. All right, first, God offers the best reason for the existence of the universe. All right, we begin first with something called the cosmological argument, or the argument from first cause. For centuries, science taught that the universe is eternal, thus giving chance and natural forces the ability to somehow create this well-designed, engineered universe. Well, we have discovered the universe is not eternal. The universe has a beginning. All right, science calls it the Big Bang. And that's nothing Christians need to be afraid of, because that's actually an argument in our favor. And the cosmological argument basically goes like this: whatever has a beginning must have a cause. The universe has a beginning, therefore the universe must have a cause. What is the most reasonable cause for the universe? Okay, that's basically the argument. Very simple. Whatever has a beginning must have a cause. The universe has a beginning, it has a cause. Now you must identify what is the cause. Now, this presupposes the universe has a beginning. And we have good evidence, very powerful evidence, the universe is not eternal, but that the universe has a beginning. We have Einstein's theory of relativity. Einstein was a pantheist. He wanted to demonstrate scientifically and mathematically that the universe was eternal. And so he came up with his incredible equation. He was trying to figure out, how is it that the universe stays in the form that it stays in and doesn't collapse in due to the force of gravity? And he, through his ingenious mind, came up with the theory of relativity, showing how the universe remains stable and doesn't collapse in due to the force of gravity. However, he made two errors in his equation. In two places, he divided by the number zero. And those of you in math know you cannot do that. And his error was pointed out by two Russian mathematicians, and he reluctantly admitted his error, called Einstein's fudge factor. And he replaced those two zeros with ones, and what did he discover? The universe does not collapse in on itself because the universe is expanding. And if it's expanding, if you go backwards, it had a beginning. All right? Now, what Einstein proved theoretically has been proved in recent times through scientific discovery. Penzias and Wilson built a huge radar dish, and they were probing the universe, all right, probing the galaxy to see if they could pick up any signs of extraterrestrial intelligence out there. But everywhere they pointed this dish, they had this, what we call the radiation afterglow or the radiation echo, the echo from a gigantic explosion that began the universe. They had been picking up the atomic radiation echo from the original Big Bang. They won a Nobel Prize for this. And so the radiation echo demonstrated the universe is not eternal. It has a beginning. Then Edwin Hubble, with the satellites we have now, we can see into the deep recesses of the universe. And he discovered what's called the red shift. As galaxies move apart, they turn redder. Our universe is expanding. He won a Nobel Prize for this one. Then, of course, we have the second law of thermodynamics, which says the universe is running down in usable energy. Hey, it's like a car. If you find a car that's running, then you might think, well, it's been running either for 5 minutes or maybe a couple hours. But if you find a car with the ignition that is on and it's completely out of gas, right, it's used up all its usable energy. If the universe was eternally old, it would have used up its usable energy. But all that points to what scientists have now unanimously concluded, that the universe has a beginning, all right? It is not eternal. It has a beginning. Stephen Hawking, you may know that name, a brilliant astrophysicist, one of the greatest scientific minds of our time, says this, and he's an atheist, all right? Almost everyone now believes that the universe and time itself had a beginning at the Big Bang. Einstein's theory of relativity, time, matter, and energy are interconnected. Can't have one without the other. In other words, the universe exploded into being. Time, matter, and energy exploded into being out of nothing. Somehow you've got to explain that. Nobel Prize winning physicist Steven Weinberg. Steven Weinberg is a devout atheist. Right? He's pretty hostile to Christianity. I've heard him speak several times. He says this, in the beginning there was an explosion. Not an explosion like those familiar on Earth, but an explosion which occurred simultaneously everywhere, filling all space from the beginning with every particle of matter rushing apart from every other particle. So at the Big Bang, time, matter, and energy came into being. In other words, the universe arose from nothing. How did it do that? Scientists still do not have a discovery. In fact, sounds more like the Genesis creation account, huh? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, along with this is also the law of cause and effect. Every cause has an effect. Every effect has a cause. No effect is greater than its cause. Whatever caused the universe is greater than the universe. Whatever created time is greater than time. What is something greater than time? It's something eternal. Whatever created this great universe is extremely powerful. It's highly intelligent, all right, to create such a well-engineered universe. The God of the Bible is the most reasonable choice. Search all the literature of all the world, the scientific, material, and religious. Genesis 1:1 is the most reasonable conclusion here. And if the universe has a beginning, atheism or naturalism has a problem, because now you've got to identify the cause. And that's something greater than the universe. Pantheism is in trouble. It's built on the idea that the universe is eternal. That one ends up in trouble. The last man standing is Christian theism. Second, we have the argument from design, or what's called the teleological argument. And that's this. Every design has a designer. The universe displays highly complex design. Therefore, the universe has a designer. That comes from Romans chapter 1. For what can be known of God has been clearly seen through the things that he has made, so that all are without excuse. William Paley, great apologist of a generation ago, gave this illustration. If you're on an airplane flying to Los Angeles and your airplane doesn't make it, you go crashing into the Pacific, and you alone survive, and you make it to an island, and you're walking around the island, it seems like there's no one else on that island, and you're walking on the island, and you find that in the sand, a watch. What would you immediately conclude? Someone else must be on the island, or someone else left it there. Who would conclude and say, it's amazing how the natural forces of wind, water, lightning, rocks colliding created this watch? And you're laughing. Why not? There's complexity. There's design. When you see that, it points to intelligent design. Could natural forces have created this watch? Yeah. One in a trillion, 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 trillion possibility. Everything collided, we got. But what's the more reasonable explanation? That's all you have to prove, okay? Which is more reasonable? All right? Which is more reasonable? Intelligent mind put it together. Well, if you don't believe natural forces cause that, how much more what we see in the universe from the telescope to the microscope, the more we are discovering, more points to intelligent design. For example, the forces that sustain the universe are delicately balanced and sit on a razor's edge. For example, the force of gravity is precisely tuned so that the universe expands at exactly the right rate. If it were just a fraction weaker, the universe would expand faster, matter would disperse too quickly, so none would clump together to form planets and galaxies. If the force of gravity were just a little bit stronger, the universe would expand too slowly, matter would clump so effectively, the universe would collapse into a super dense lump. And astronomers state the expansion rate cannot be altered by any more than 1 part in 10 to the 55th power. That's how delicately balanced our universe is. We live in a just right universe. Then when you look just at our solar system, we've got the sun burning at the right rate, at just the right size. The planets are exactly the right distance from the sun. Just 2% closer, we would burn up. 2% farther, be too cold. The Earth rotates at the right speed. Any slower, you'd have too much daylight, things would burn up. Okay, and then you have too much darkness, photosynthesis cannot occur. We've got just the right moon, just the right size that holds the Earth at the right axial tilt, and it rotates nicely, and the moon stabilizes. Also, the right force of gravity that allows the waves, okay, and the ocean currents that stir up the bottom of the seas, right, so we can have life on our reefs and on our ocean floors. We've got a big brother protecting us. Why is it that many more asteroids and meteors don't collide into the Earth? Well, we got a big brother, Jupiter, that's protecting us. Jupiter is a huge gas ball, and it is so big and in the right position that when asteroids and meteors coming into the solar system get pulled in or pulled off the Earth's rotation by Jupiter. And Jupiter is a huge gas ball. It's not a solid planet. So when these asteroids and meteors collide into Jupiter, Jupiter absorbs it like a baseball in a catcher's mitt. If Jupiter were a solid planet, these collisions might throw Jupiter's rotation off. I mean, we could say this all happened just by chance, but the mathematical probability of that continues to go up and up and up and up and up to the point we're getting, you mathematicians know, getting to numbers we would say are a mathematical zero. And when you study biology, like the human brain, I mean, we've not been able to create a computer that can do what the human brain can do. It's about 4 to 6 pounds, and it is an incredible machine. Carl Sagan, the atheist scientist, said, the information in the brain expressed in bits is probably comparable to the total number of connections among neurons, about 100 trillion, 10 to the 14th power bits. In other words, if you wrote out all the information that's in your brain in book form, you'd fill over 20 million volumes of books. And he said, that's enough books to stack from here to the moon. That's how much information is contained in your brain. And he ended up saying this, the brain is a very big place in a very small space. The neurochemistry of the brain is astonishingly busy. The circuitry of a machine more wonderfully created than any devised by humans. And if you look in the microscope, microbiology, we're making amazing discoveries of DNA. And now DNA has become one of the most powerful evidences for intelligent design. DNA, it's about 12 to 2,000 letters or bases. that are needed to build just one protein. Okay? Your combination of amino acids is very complex to create just one single protein. Scientist Dr. Stephen Meyer states the probability of the right amino acids forming the precise sequence needed to form one protein molecule is one chance in 100,000 trillion, 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 trillion. Hey, that's 10 with 125 zeros behind it. And once again, those of you in math know that's pretty much a mathematical zero. He further states the odds of this would be the odds for just one protein molecule. A minimally complex cell needs between 300 and 500 protein molecules. So complex. Atheist Richard Dawkins says the machine code of the genes is uncannily computer-like. The pages of a molecular biology journal might be interchanged with those of a computer engineering journal. Bill Gates, when he talked about DNA, he said DNA is far, far more complex than any software ever created. What best accounts for this apparent design and precision? Chance or an intelligent designer? You know, it would be like this. A monkey jumped on a computer and just randomly hit keys and we got a set of encyclopedias. That's how incredible the odds are. Right? I was talking to my cousin, who's the genius in the clan. He's the genius of the Zukerans. His degrees are in physics. He invented the laser tattoo removal device. So if you need your tattoo removed, that's the device he invented. Incredible genius. And we were talking on the golf course, and he was a devout atheist. And I said, you know, Addy, you know, you're an atheist. You're a physicist. How did the universe has a beginning, right? He said, yes, in the Big Bang, all right? I said, tell me, how did it all take place? And he kind of used all these complex terms. And I said, basically, you're telling me out of nothing, this great universe exploded into being. Does that make any sense? And he thought about it for a little while. He goes, well, basically, yes, that's what I'm saying. And I said, that would be like saying a tornado came through a junkyard, okay, just like Evan's illustration, came through a junkyard, and left behind a full-running 747. And he said, well, it's a little more complex than that, Pat. It's like a tornado came to a junkyard and left a whole fleet of 747s. And I said, yeah. And I said, so you mean out of nothing, we had this great explosion and we got this incredible universe that we have? And he said, yeah, just happened. And I said, wow, that takes a lot of faith. It's an incredible amount of faith. See, I don't have that kind of faith. That's why I believe in an intelligent creator, right? Because from what I understand, nothing produces nothing, produces nothing, produces nothing. You believe nothing produced this incredible universe, right? That's an incredible amount of faith. And he thought about it for a while. Now, a few years have gone by, and I was talking to him again, and now he believes in God, all right? But he hasn't come to faith in Christ yet, but we got him one step closer, right? And that's what evangelism is all about, right? Getting one step closer to the gospel of Christ, all right? So we got one step closer. Now he's omni-religious man, all right? So now we got step two here. But the design argument is a tremendously powerful argument. The more we discover in the sciences, the more it's pointing to intelligent design because we're seeing a lot more complexity in what looks like design. Then we have the moral argument. And the moral argument goes like this. Every law has a lawgiver. There is an absolute moral law. In every culture, rape is wrong. Stealing is wrong. Adultery is wrong. Murder is wrong. There's an absolute moral law. Therefore, there's an absolute moral lawgiver. It comes from Romans chapter 2. The law of God imprinted or written on our hearts. Hey, the fact that we can identify something that is objectively evil, and what is unjust reveals an understanding in all people, there's a universal moral law.
Once again, we've run out of time. Thank you for joining us here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii. That number is 483-0586, or you may email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit the subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Just log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.